Hare Krishna. Good morning, dear devotees. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We'll be reading from Brihad Bhagavatamrita today. I think the last time we had class to the English-speaking devotees was Monday, and that was before Pankajangri Prabhu departed. And I'm sure all of you have probably heard by now that he did depart. And we spoke about him on Wednesday to the devotees and to the Russian-speaking devotees. And I just wanted to mention that there is an article about Pankajangri, which was an interview that Kamala Lochana, a devotee from Ottawa, he interviewed Pankajangri Prabhu for a magazine for my disciples, Mukham Karoti Vachalam. And it was quite a substantial interview. It was about 11 pages long. And he tells a lot about himself, how he came to Mayapur, met Prabhupada, and how he began his worship, deity worship, took initiation, of course, and then began his deity worship. And he spoke a little bit about deity worship, and we spoke from that particular section on Wednesday. Specifically, I let Pankajangri Prabhu answer one of the questions that I had received about deity worship, and I thought he would be the best person to answer it. So his answer was perfect. And for any of you who are interested in seeing the interview, it's posted on my website, and you can find it there. And also, it was posted on Dandavat's. The whole interview was posted there as well. And I encourage you to read it. It's a nice meditation. And class is also there, posted on YouTube, but it's to the Russian-speaking devotees, and therefore it's England and English and Russian both. So, for me, it was a nice meditation on that day to speak about him. And there have since today in Mayapur, they had a memorial service. Senior leaders spoke. Janani Vas Prabhu spoke and told the whole story about right from birth. He took us all the way back to 1944, which is the year they both appeared, and told us a little bit how they were the favorites of their mother, and because it was during the war, how they were sent off, and they were taken care of in a nunnery, separated from their mother for some time. And he went into the whole history of their childhood. And then he also spoke about many of the things that Pankajangri Prabhu had spoken about in the article as well, about their time when they went to India in 1967 and traveling about looking for something mystical. And Janani Vas was the first to discover. And Pankajangri somehow lagged behind a little bit, but in due course of time, he understood that his brother was onto something. And soon thereafter, he joined him. So all of these details were talked about, and as well other devotees spoke, and I'm sure probably that's also been posted on YouTube. I watched it for some time this morning, and I did not attend. There's very strict protocols, and I haven't left my quarters. I don't know. It's been a while since I left my quarters. And as I believe I've told you that I told my therapist that I've added an additional exercise that she didn't prescribe. And she was surprised to hear it. And when I told her, she understood that the additional exercise that I've added is climbing the walls. So, anyways, so I've been in my quarters for some time, and we'll see how long it will remain that way. But now there's strict, very strict orders have been given by the West Bengal government. And they're not doing a full lockdown, but they waited until the elections were over before. We won't talk about that. But now, the day after the elections were over, they actually imposed very, very strict instructions about how gatherings should be conducted, we'll see how long that goes for, and we'll see how long the see what happens as a result of it. So now, currently in Mayapur, there is strict protocols, and there is an attempt, I believe, by the local leaders to enforce it. And there is also, I believe, as I mentioned before, there will be a fundraising effort, because they want to, a lot is required to take care of the numbers, the ever-increasing numbers of devotees who are becoming sick, and what to speak of the lack of oxygen and other supplies that are required. Should this intensify? The last I heard, there's so many different things going out, but they're saying that this is the second wave, but it's nothing compared to what the third wave will be like. And they're anticipating that the third wave, they don't know exactly when it will come, but some are saying it could come following the second wave, just move into the third wave. Some are saying there could be a little lull. But I did hear from a reliable source, and I probably won't use his name, but I did hear from a very reliable source that they are projecting that between now and August 1st, and an additional 1 million Indians will be leaving their body. So, that's the current state of affairs in India. I have since received, probably every other day, I get a notification from the U.S. State Department, because I'm on their mailing list, and they're pushing me, as they are to all U.S. citizens. If you're going to go, you should go now, because they've set up various flights between India and the United States. I'm not looking for that, at least right now. That's not an option for me. I don't feel that it's anyways, it's a decision I'm not going to make now, and I'm not even thinking about it returning to the United States. But I do get, almost every other day, I get an email from the U.S. State Department. They're not saying immediately, but they're letting me know and all U.S. citizens know that if you're thinking about it, this is the time to go. So, a little update. I didn't plan on speaking about it, but I thought I would because I was speaking about the protocols that now are being enforced in Mayapur, whereas previously they weren't so strictly enforced. Now, because of the government enforcing it, they will be enforcing it more strictly. And there's no, I don't know as how long they're going to enforce these protocols, but I'm sure it will be for quite some time, at least several weeks. So that is my introduction. We've lost a great soul, Pankajangri Prabhu, from our association, and that's happened since our last meeting, and I wanted to encourage everybody to please hear what's been made available about him. It's the loss incalculable, and as I've noticed that everywhere, all temples, especially all Indian temples, they're holding memorial services. He was so well known and adored, worshipped himself in so many respects that as well as Jnanivas, of course, and devotees have been submitting prayers, poems, and it's another great loss. But as I spoke about for Pankajangri Prabhu, there's no loss, especially if we're really, really captured the essence of all that we've been reading about this section of deity worship and the fruit of proper worship. There's no, for Pankajangri Prabhu, all facility is, all, for him there's no loss. For us, the loss is his association, but for him, his service will certainly continue uninterrupted. So, we will begin Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Volume 2, Chapter 4. I believe, as I mentioned in last class, we've finished the verses. Narada Muni was speaking about proper worship of the deity, the proper consciousness. And now the verses themselves are going to speak about what is the improper consciousness. And because I've incorporated a lot about what is improper consciousness in the verses, because the commentaries also spoke about it, I've covered a lot from these upcoming verses of improper consciousness. I've already covered a lot in previous class, and it just so happens today's verse, which is text, I believe, 212, if I'm correct. Yes, text 213, three verses together, 213, 214, 215, which have a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 page commentary. So today is going to be some reading from the commentary itself. And I will probably speak on a couple of sections of the commentary on topics which I haven't spoken about yet. But Let us begin. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ye tu tat pratimam nutnam adishtanam hariti bheda drishtyata shaladi bhujya sampujayantihi namanayanti tad bhaktan sarvabhutavamanina Bhuja garvena veda gyan atikramanti cha prabho taiva sava bhakti pyo nyunaste mandha bhudhaya bhuja palam na vidanti taiva hi yatoditam. Translation. There are others, whoever, who concoct some new image and call it Lord Hari, but who actually see that form as different from the Lord. They worship with the idea that the deity is no more than stone or some other material substance, and they respect neither the devotees of Lord Hari nor living beings in general. Proud of their worship, they transgress the injunctions of the Vedas and the Lord. These foolish worshippers, the lowest of all the Lord's devotees, do not obtain the promised fruits of worship. Previous verse, persons who properly worship Krishna in his deity form never disrespect Krishna's devotees, and if because of being absorbed in worship they accidentally do so, the devotees make light of such offenses and praise the worshippers. Om Agyanati Marandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unminitam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pungum Gangayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurundina Tarana Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namane Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Pastachade Shatarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Siddhi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we've been speaking about respect, and we talked a little bit about why deity worship began, because there was not proper respect of seeing the manifestation of the Lord within the heart. We quoted the verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, and then we spoke from many references about not only one has to worship the deity in the right consciousness, but the right consciousness also includes giving proper respect to Vaishnavas and even respect towards all living beings. And that is the right consciousness. And therefore, this verse for today specifically states that there are some who don't worship in the right consciousness, and that is, they see the deity as a symbolic representation. I guess that's probably one way to describe it. It's simply a symbolic representation, and they worship the deity because they see it's a symbolic representation. They think of it as stone or wood or whatever substance, metal. And therefore, they don't see it in the ways that we've already described of seeing it as non-different from the Lord. And because they see it as simply as a symbolic representation, that in of itself doesn't give them the fruit of deity worship. They do get fruits, and this will be explained, but the fruit they get is sense gratification, basically. And that will be described in subsequent verses. And but that's not a desirable fruit for anybody who understands what is the purpose behind worshiping the deities. They understand the desirable fruit of that worship is to have association and service to the Lord eternally. And by worshiping in the right consciousness, that eternal association begins. And as we spoke about in our class on Wednesday, speaking from Pankajangri Prabhu's statements, he was describing that sometimes a little push is needed in the worship of the deity. He gave the example, it was a nice example. He gave the example of that when you normally, when you turn on the engine with the key to a car, then when you turn the key, then it creates a spark, it ignites the ignition, turns the engine, and the engine influences the wheels, and the wheels start moving, and this is the normal procedure. He said, but sometimes if that doesn't work, then you have to get out of the car, and you push the car, and you have to make the wheels move first. And when you push the car, then you throw it into gear, then you turn on the ignition, and then you jump into the car. And when you jump into the car, he says, that's rag bhakti. He says, but you have to push first. And he used this as an analogy that the pushing is that we have to push ourselves to conform to certain rules and regulations and a way of thinking. And it was so very nice the way he described it, the way of thinking, because it's the way he thinks. And he shared that in the article describing the way he thinks. He's very conscientious because he understands that worshiping the deity, because the deity is a person, it's just not a question of what you do in the presence of the deity, but also because the deity is a person and the deity also is conscious. Most persons are. The deity is also conscious of what you do also when you're not in the presence of the deity. And he said how he started to push himself to control his life in a way that would be satisfactory to the object of his worship, by washing himself properly, because he was always conscious. Before he goes on the altar, he has to be clean, and he's always careful to take his dhoti off, And he says he doesn't do things, he's very conscientious, he won't do things like going to the restaurant, he won't do things like playing football. He said he adjusts his life as to how a person who has a personal relationship with the Lord should be living his life. So he was comparing that to the push. And he says, when you push yourself in this way and serve in this way, meditating on the person that you're serving, then in due course of time, it becomes spontaneous. And that's supposed to be the fruit, that when the spontaneous service is there, then you do it because you understand this is Krishna. And in due course of time, if the consciousness is right, the fruit of the worship is there, and that's the whole reason why Narada Muni is explaining this, because the real fruit of the worship is, yes, your eternal relationship starts through the service of the deity, and your eternal relationship continues. That's the fruit of the worship, and that's what the devotee who worships in the right consciousness, that's the fruit he gets. So the one who worships in the wrong consciousness, he doesn't get that fruit. He gets other fruits. And of course, those fruits are not desirable to a bhakta, to a devotee, and therefore it's described that the fruits they get, they can obtain those fruits, but it's to be understood their bhakti is the lowest. And therefore, it's seen by genuine bhaktas as the lowest. Although Sanatana Goswami and Narada Muni is going to go on to explain that even those who are worshipping on the lowest platform, who don't have the right consciousness, still, out of the mercy of elevated Vaishnavas, they and the Lord, if they remain steady in their worship, even in the wrong consciousness, after time, how long? Well, it's the only point that's being made is it's after some time. It's not quick. So after some time, the right consciousness will manifest for those who remain steady. But for those who are only wishing to establish some relationship, to obtain some temporary fruit, and when the fruit is obtained, they think, I got the fruit. So they get their fruit and they get their enjoyment. But as all temporary enjoyment is, they have something to look forward to after their temporary enjoyment, and that's their suffering. So they'll get that also for those who simply worship because they want to enjoy some temporary fruit. So these points are brought to light in verses that are coming. But this is mentioned in the verse itself. That's why I brought it up. That Narada Muni says, proud of their worship, they transgress the injunctions of the Vedas and the Lord. These foolish worshippers, the lowest of all the Lord's devotees, do not obtain the promised fruits of worship. So, I haven't started reading the commentary yet. So now, I will start reading the commentary. When criticizing those attached to deity worship, the scriptures are really speaking about offensive worshippers who think the deity only an image of the Supreme Lord not the Lord in person. Such idolaters consider the deity mere stone, wood, or metal. They concoct their own forms of the Lord, unaware that the authorized deity appears by his own plan. And they are oblivious to the presence of the Lord in his devotees. Because such offensive worshippers lack proper respect for the deity and the Vaishnavas, those worshippers naturally offend all living entities and violate the basic principles of the Vedas. Now, most of this is what we've already talked about. What is disrespect? We spoke about last time. Towards Vaishnavas, what is disrespect towards the living entities? So I'm not going to discuss that, but I will discuss this point here, that such idolaters, they consider the deity mere stone, wood or metal. They concoct their own forms of the Lord, and they are unaware that the authorized deity appears by his own plan. And they are oblivious to the presence of the Lord and his devotees. So, how does the Lord appear? Well, he appears, it's his own plan. He's always chooses where he will appear. And as we know, the deities manifest themselves. Sometimes they are self-manifest. And sometimes they are manifest, as ways we've described before, by being invoked, by the chanting of appropriate mantras, they agree to manifest. But self-manifest also means, as described here, the deity appears by his own plan, his desire. And of course, there are so many stories, I'm not going to go into detail of all of them, but especially as we have heard about, read about, for the associates of Lord Chaitanya, how the Lord manifested as their deities to them. And it was certainly the Lord's choice to manifest to them. Lord Chaitanya, of course, especially Rupa and Sanatan, he had given them instructions to go to Vrindavan and to establish the worship of deities and establish temples. Supreme Lord himself requested that of them. And the deities had been established. Who was it? Vajranaba, who was one of the sons of Krishna, had established deities of Madan Mohan, of Govinda, and other deities that had been established thousands of years previously, but as we know, they were lost. They had been placed in various places, and they needed to be uncovered. And they were waiting. They were waiting to manifest themselves to their devotees. And because Lord Chaitanya had given Rupa and Sanatan instructions to please reestablish the worship of these deities, the Lord manifested himself to them. There's the story of Rupa Goswami, how Govinda manifested that he was meditating, that he had been given this instruction by the Lord, and he was anxious. He was looking. He was looking for the deities. He'd spent so much time looking. Where are the deities? He couldn't find them, and he was sitting. And then in his meditation and during his dream, I think it was, that the Lord appeared to him and told him that there is a cow that goes to Sarabi, cow that goes to the same place every day. It's called a place called Gomatila. And she leaves her milk there. And you should go to that place. And in that place you will find me. I'm waiting for you. So Rupa Goswami, he went to that place. And he sat by that place. And sure enough, a cow came. And then milk came from the bags of the cow, entered into the earth, and it seemed that the earth was drinking up all the milk. So immediately he understood. He became ecstatic, lost consciousness. He understood, this is where Govinda is. And he went, got townspeople, and they uncovered, and shortly after uncovering a little of the earth, they found that Govinda Dev was just there below the surface, manifesting himself, waiting to be worshipped by Rupa Goswami. It was his Leela, Govinda Dev's Leela. Sanata Goswami, Madan Gopal. So nice, we think that the whole, you know, this whole Brihad Bhagavatamrita is about Madan Gopal. Well, Sanatan Goswami also, as we know, he had a dream. He used to go do Madhukar every day to the home of a Brahmin. I believe his name was Damodar Chaube. And when he would go there, he saw this beautiful deity. And he became captivated by the deity who was being worshipped there. And it just so happens, the deity was being worshipped by the wife of Damodar Chaube. And he became so captivated by this deity that he would go back again and again to the same place to beg Madhukari. He was not interested in what they had to offer him in terms of Madhukari. He just wanted to get darshan of this most beautiful deity. And who had captured his heart. And it's described that he decided that he would approach, because this woman, this wife of Damodar Chaube, she was worshipping the deity, and she was seeing that she had a son also whose name was Saranda. And she worshipped the deity and her son as the same. She had motherly affection, spontaneous motherly affection, and she was worshipping them in that way as a young cowherd boy. And Sanatana Goswami decided that he would try to change her way of worship. And he one day suggested to her, your deity is your Ishtadev and your son is your son. Why are you treating them on the same level? You know, because he was testing her spontaneous devotion. And he said to her, you should worship him as an Ishtadev. And by worshiping him as Ishtadev, it means you should have more elaborate worship. Fanfare, do so many other things in your worship. And you should see there's a difference between your son and Madan Gopal. So she heard Sanatan Goswami, and then she did it. And then Sanatan Goswami came back again to beg alms. And I believe she had a dream. And in the dream, the deity told her, I don't like it, what you're doing to me. Why are you doing this? You're worshiping me this way. Why have you changed? And so she told Sanatan Goswami, the deity told me he doesn't like it. He wants me to continue to worship in the same mood as I've always been worshiping. So when Sanatan Goswami knew that, heard that, he immediately understood, oh, she's really worshiping him with spontaneous love. And all my hopes that I had for someday maybe even getting the opportunity to worship this deity have been dashed. There's no way he'll come to me now. But still he was so captivated by the beauty, he would go back. And one day, she said to him, I had another dream. And this time, Madan Gopal told me that he wants to be worshipped by you. And not only that, but I'm getting very old and it's becoming very difficult for me to serve him properly. So I can understand that it isn't a proper desire that he wants to go to you. And as described, that Madan Gopal was, as soon as Madan Gopal saw Sanatan Goswami, and as soon as Sanatan Goswami saw Madan Gopal, that Sanatan Goswami in his heart, he was just always meditating on Madan Gopal and wanting to serve him. And Madan Gopal was always meditating on wanting to be served by Sanatan Goswami. So the arrangement was there by his own plan. It was the Lord's own plan. Then what happened? Of course, Sanatan Goswami took him, brought him to a hut, I think built a hut for him, and put him in a tree, and began offering worship. And then, as we know, then he began offering him the uncooked chapatis, and the deity began explaining, you know, could you do at least give me a little salt, and all the wonderful reciprocal relationships began manifesting between them. So this is another way that the Lord chooses to be worshipped. And he appears by his own plan. There's another plan, another description was Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Famous, well-known story of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, that he was went to Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya had sent him there. Lord Chaitanya was in Puri. He wanted to go to Puri, but he didn't receive instruction to go to Puri. Lord Chaitanya departed. And then Gopal Bhatta was lamenting that he wanted to worship the Lord. The Lord appeared to him in a dream, instructed Gopal Bhatta, you should go to Nepal, and when you go there, you will find me there. So Gopal Bhatta went to Nepal. He took his bath in Nepal in the Gandaki River. And after taking his bath, he put his water pot to take some of the water out of the river. And when he took the pot out, he saw there were shilas in the pot. And he couldn't understand why the shilas were there. So he emptied the water and he filled it up again. And he saw the shilas were there again. And then he emptied the water, he filled the pot. This time he saw the shilas were there again. And there were 12 shilas there. He took it as the Lord's desire. And he brought them shilas back to Vrindavan. And he began worshiping them. And then one day, some Vaishnava merchant gave him some very, very nice clothes to offer for him to use and to dress his shilas. And he was thinking, but these clothes are very nice, but he said, but actually my shilas are around. I don't know how I'm going to be able to dress them in these clothes. And then he began meditating how nice it would be if the Lord would appear in a form, which he could worship. And he started to read, I think it's the pastimes of Srimad Bhagavatam. He was reading about how Lord Nrisimhadev appeared and meditating on how the Lord appeared from the pillar. And then he spent the whole day just meditating on worshiping the Lord in some personal form. And then the following morning, when he woke up, he went back and he saw that the deity manifested in a form to accept his worship. He chose to worship. Self-manifest. This is how the Lord, of course, reciprocates with those who, of course, worship the Lord in the right consciousness. And the Lord sometimes will manifest in this way to them, by his own plan. So the idolaters, as described here, they consider the deity just stone, wood or metal. And they concoct their own form of the Lord. And they're not aware that an authorized deity appears by his own plan. So then, of course, as we said, sometimes the Lord is self-manifest and sometimes the Lord manifests by his own plan when the devotee calls him. So still, because he's bound by the love of his devotees who calls him, then he naturally reciprocates by that love and appears to fulfill the desires of his devotees. But it's always, he's always independent, and it's always his choice to appear or to not appear. And now we understand what is the consciousness which makes him appear. And when he appears by his own choice, for those who have the right consciousness, someone can't say he's not there. Only somebody who has the improper vision, who can't see, such persons will go, they'll see stone, marble, metal, or wood, but the devotee sees Krishna. So, continuing in the commentary, and a lot of this now is about the offensive worshippers. So I'm going to read through. Some Vaishnavas are free from the influence of the modes of nature, and others are still conditioned by goodness, passion, and ignorance. The offensive worshippers described in this verse are the lowest of the Lord's devotees. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, they are called Prakrita. A devotee who faithfully engages in the worship of the deity in the temple but does not behave properly toward other devotees or people in general is called a Prakrita Bhakta. A materialistic devotee and is considered to be in the lowest position. This is a verse from the 11th canto. We quoted it before. Archayam eva haraye pujam yashraye yate natad bhakteshu chanyeshu sa bhakta prakrita smritaha. The scriptural statement, pratima mandabhudinam. We've also referred to this verse before. This verse specifically states that the deity is meant for the less intelligent. And this is one of the verses which Gopakumar was trying to understand from Narada Muni, why such statements exist. The deity is verse, and therefore this explanation is here. The scriptural statement, pratima manda buddhiman, the deity is meant for the less intelligent, refers to this lowest class of devotees who lack spiritual discrimination. They do not receive the benefits of deity worship described in the Shastras. Then is a verse quoted from the third canto of the Bhagavatam, Yo mam saveshu bhuteshu santam atmanam ishwaram hitvaracham bhajate mahodhyad basmanyeva juhoti saha. One who worships the deity of Godhead in the temples, but does not know that the Supreme Lord as Paramatma is situated in every living entity's heart, must be in ignorance and is compared to one who offers oblations into ashes. In other words, the personality of Godhead does not accept their worship. Now there's going to be a lot of verses about how the Lord will not accept worship. And so I'm going to read those verses also. Is a verse as stated by Sri Prahlad Maharaj in his prayers to Lord Nrisimha. I won't read the Sanskrit. The Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always fully satisfied in himself. Therefore, when something is offered to him, the offering, by the Lord's mercy, is for the benefit of the devotee, because the Lord does not need service from anyone. To give an example, if one's face is decorated, the reflection of one's face in a mirror is also seen to be decorated. This is 7.9.11 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Continuing in the commentary, in this prayer, Prahlad describes Lord Nrisimha as the personal master, Prabhu, of all living souls, and as Prahlad's own life and soul, Atmana Prabhur Ayam. Everything the jivas possess actually belongs to the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, the Lord, as merciful as he is, rejects the respect and offerings of jivas who are materialistic fools, janad avidusha. The symptoms of their foolishness are described here in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Such conditioned souls consider the Supreme Lord's deity a material statue and his worship an empty ritual, and they disrespect the Lord's devotees and the living beings in general. Therefore, the Lord is not interested in their offerings. Sri Narada likewise states in Srimad Bhagavatam 4.30.1.21, Na bhajati ku manishinam sa idjam harya adhanatma dhana priyo rasagya shuta dhana kula kamanam adharye viradhati papam akichaneshu satsu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes very dear to those devotees who have no material possessions, but are fully happy in possessing the devotional service of the Lord. Indeed, the Lord relishes the devotional activities of such devotees. But persons who are puffed up with material education, wealth, aristocracy, and fruitive activity are very proud of possessing material things, and they often deride the devotees. Even if such people offer the Lord worship, the Lord never accepts them. This is a verse stated by Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Actually, that's one of my favorite verses. I like this verse. I quote it a lot. Because it's a verse that explains, essentially, that a wealthy person generally becomes proud. And if he's not careful, that pride, even if he worships the Lord, that pride will make him look down upon a Vaishnava who externally appears to be somebody very insignificant. Why? Because Vaishnavas don't always manifest their opulence. Maybe in Vaikuntha they do, but especially in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, Vaishnavas don't manifest their opulence. In fact, they oftentimes appear externally to be materially impoverished. Not only do they appear to be materially impoverished, but externally they appear to be beggars. And And Vrindavan Das Thakur, he quotes that verse in connection to the story of Shuklambar. Shuklambar Brahmachari, he, from the external appearance, he appeared to be just that, a beggar. And most in Navadvipa at that time, because their preference was worship of goddess Chandi, their preference was opulence. And not only was their preference opulence, but they would deride those who appeared to be beggars, as they did, as we know, with Kolavecha Sridhar. They derided him. They would make statements that, you know, when he was chanting the names of the Lord at night, they would accuse him of screaming out because of hunger pain, because he lives in such abject poverty that he can't even clothe himself properly, and he can't even live in an appropriate place, and they would ridicule him. And they had a similar disposition towards Shuklambara. And Vrindavan Das Thakur describes that Shuklambara was hidden, his opulence, his devotion, his wealth, everything was hidden to everyone. And but for Shuklambara, he describes, he didn't even know what the word poverty meant. He specifically states that. Now, someone can say, from an external point of view, especially Shuklambara, he made a point that he didn't even want to go to the homes of wealthy people. He chose to give everything to the Lord. So it didn't make any difference. And this is also described by Vrindavan Das Thakur. Because he wanted to give everything to the Lord, it didn't make any difference to him if he had anything. Because even if he had something insignificant, he understood it belonged to the Lord. So he wouldn't go to the homes of the wealthy people to beg. He would go to the homes of the most impoverished people to beg. People who from external vision appeared to be living in householders. He was a brahmachari. Householders who appeared to be living in poverty. And he would go house to house, and in impoverished homes, instead of getting opulent rice, they would give him some broken rice. And after visiting, I believe it was about at least 10 homes, he finally had enough rice that he could put in his little bag on his shoulder. And because when he had sufficient amount of the broken rice, then he would prepare an offering. And he would offer it. And then he would take the remnants. Whatever was left for him to honor as the remnants of his offering. So one day, Lord Chaitanya, he saw Shuklambara. And Lord Chaitanya was dancing very ecstatically. And Shuklambara, because he's such a great devotee, Shuklambara, upon seeing the Lord, he just began dancing in ecstasy. He was just in total ecstasy. And the Lord was also in ecstasy, seeing Shuklambara. And he called Shuklambar. He said, come here. You have something I want. And I've been waiting for my offering. And Shukambar, of course, came before the Lord, and the Lord saw that he was carrying a bag on his shoulder, and he snatched the bag from his shoulder, and Shukambar immediately understood. He said, you can't take this. This is not fit for you. Please, don't. Don't take this. And the Lord said to Shukumbhara, he said, don't you understand, Shukumbhara? Don't you remember that I took this from you before too? When you came to me also as a poor, externally poor Brahmin, you came to me and I snatched the rice out from your hands. And I'm always eager to accept from the hands of whatever the devotee has, from his hand, whatever he wants to offer me, I'm so eager to accept it. And he even says that, and Vrindavan Das Thakur goes on to explain that ordinarily it's understood that if one has any hope of getting the Lord to accept an offering, then anyone who worships the deity knows that by proper worship of the deity, the proper mudras and mantras and everything else required to make the offering needs to be done as part of the proper offering for making the worship. And when the proper mudras and mantras are executed in the right consciousness, then one has the best chance that the Lord will be very eager to accept the offering. But Vrindavan Das Thakur specifically makes the point that in Shuklambara's case, all such mudras and mantras and all such requirements for making an offering were inconsequential. They're smashed to powder, irrelevant. When the Lord is eager to take something from his devotee, then he'll take it. He'll take it. And he wants to demonstrate how dear devotees are who give everything to him, as Shuklambara was. He specifically wanted to establish that point, especially for those who were so much interested in offering great opulence and thinking that by offering their opulence, that yes, we are worthy servants of the Lord. Not only do they think that their opulent offerings are being accepted because they're worthy to be accepted by the Lord, but also because they're so proud of their opulence, so proud of their worship, they look at somebody like Shukambara and they say, what's this? They don't see what Lord Chaitanya saw. And Lord Chaitanya wanted to make sure they saw it. For those who could see. Those who are blind, they'll never see. But for those who could see, he wanted to make sure that everyone understood that if you think you can worship me with all kinds of opulent offerings and deride my devotees, if you think you can do that, you've got another thing coming. You can offer anything you want. But as this verse we just quoted describes, the Lord's just not inclined to accept it. Not inclined to accept it. It's like throwing, you know, offerings into ashes, pouring ghee into ashes. What is there? Same point is being made. So this verse that we just quoted by Narada Muni, Vrindavan Das Thakur, he quotes it in Chaitanya Bhagavat. And of course, he's establishing the same point. Don't deride devotees. Don't disrespect Vaishnavas. Don't pigeonhole a Vaishnava into your materialistic way of thinking. Just don't do it. Vaishnavas should be worshipped. And if you deride Vaishnavas, those who are genuine Vaishnavas, you can have all the pomp you want in your ritualistic worship. But I'm not interested. Right? It's just like Prahlad Maharaj in his prayer to Lord Nrisimhadeva, he prays that you cannot please the Supreme Personality of Godhead by becoming expert Brahmins or become advanced learning, nor by austerities, nor by chastity, nor by accepting vows, nor by great sacrifices. None of these things will get the Lord's attention. The Lord is pleased only when you have unflinching devotional service to Him. Without sincere devotional service, everything is just a show. And Prahlad Maharaj explains that point, that if you want to get the Lord's attention, then devotion has to be there. Otherwise, he doesn't look. He doesn't look. You can great austerities, accepting vows, advanced learning, chastity, doesn't make any difference. These things are external. The Lord looks at devotion. So the same point is being made by Narada Muni. I wanted to read this verse one more time, and I'm going to end in the commentary, at least. I'm going to read the verse. This is Chaitanya Bhagavat. I'm going to read it within the context of this story of Shuklambar. And these last few verses. He says, wait a minute. Am I in the right place? Yes. He said, text 134, the Lord said, listen, Shuklambar. I always enjoy pastimes in your heart. What you eat is what I eat. When you walk about collecting alms, I also walk about. I descended to this world to give devotional service and pure love. Birth after birth, you are my affectionate servant. Now I give you devotional service and pure love. Please know for certain, devotional service and pure love are my life breath. Hearing this, given to Shuklambar, the circle of Vaishnavas made a great sound of Jai, Jai, Hari. What fortunate person knows the nectar heart of the devotees? Even though they are servants of Goddess Lakshmi's husband, they still go begging from house to house. Goddess Lakshmi's husband, Lord Chaitanya, ate the rice Shuklambar Brahman had begged from 10 homes. In the Vedas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is a great treasure house of transcendental virtues, describes the rules of offering with mudras food to him. If these rules are not followed, the Lord will not accept anything. Still, when he comes to his devotee's doorstep, the Lord pounds those rules into powder. Shuklam Bhara's rice is the proof of this. Therefore, love and devotion are the life breath of all rules and regulations. Orders and prohibitions are all servants of love and devotion. Anyone unhappy with this will perish. Vedavyas affirms that love and devotion are at the root of all rules and regulations. Lord Chaitanya showed how this is true. Shuklambara, Brahman, did not do any mudras. He did not even make an offering. Still, the Lord ate his rice with great care. Persons blinded by sense pleasure do not understand the heart of all of this. Persons intoxicated by wealth, family, and children do not understand the Vaishnavas. Lord Krishna never accepts the opulent worship and offerings of fools who see them only as poverty-stricken people, mock the Vaishnavas. This is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam 4.31.21. Nabhajati kumanishinam sa'idjam harir adanatma dhana priyo rasagya shuta dhana kula kamaranam madharaye vidadhati papam akinchaneshu satsu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes very dear to those devotees who have no material possessions but are fully happy in possessing the devotional service of the Lord. Indeed, the Lord relishes the devotional activities of such devotees. Those who are puffed up with material education, wealth, aristocracy, and fruitive activity are very proud of possessing material things, and they often deride the devotees. Even if such people offer the Lord worship, the Lord never accepts them. Lord Krishna is the life breath of the materially impoverished devotees. This all the Vedas sing. Lord Chaitanya personally showed the truth of this. Anyone who hears the story of how the Lord ate Shuklambara's rice will attain pure love and devotion for Lord Chaitanya's feet. I wanted to make sure that verse was read. we will stop. I need to stand up and I'll chant for a few minutes standing up. And we've only read 2 pages of this commentary. There's still 3 pages left. And we'll do that on Monday. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Siddhi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And class will be tomorrow morning for Russian-speaking devotees at the usual time. And we will meet again on Monday evening at the usual time also. Thank you very much. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Siddhi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.